Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Revascularization Nation, all coronary, all the time. I'm your host, Mike Kramer. The decision to recommend bypass surgery may be one of the most difficult choices an interventional cardiologist makes. Effectively, confirming the angiographic result in multivessel coronary disease may mean the difference between deferral, PCI, or CABG. At times, the angiogram and clinical scenario clearly indicate bypass is the best strategy. Other times, the complexity of the patient and the ambiguity of the angiogram make that decision much less clear. My guest today is going to discuss how he uses IFR in the setting of multivessel coronary disease to simplify these decisions and guide what he calls precision revascularization. Dr. Ambrosia is an interventional cardiologist at Banner Health in Phoenix, Arizona. He has over 22 years of experience in interventional cardiology and was one of the pioneers in the use of IFR and co-registration. Dr. Ambrosia is a true patient advocate and has developed methods to utilize our technologies to elevate his PCI planning and surgical conversations. Dr. Ambrosia, welcome to the show.
It's good to be with you, Mike.
Let's begin by framing the problem. How common are complex cases in your lab?
I think we've always had complex cases, even from when I started in the early days of PCI. In the last few years, I think as the population's aging, as people are getting older and surviving other illnesses with more comorbidities, we're seeing more complex multivessel disease.
How prevalent is the multivessel coronary disease in the patients you see?
You know, it's interesting. For most interventionalists, some week you would almost think it's 100%, and then some weeks it's not. In our practice, and you know, we practice in Arizona, where our population tends to be a little bit older, single vessel disease is less than, you know, a third of the patients that we bring to the cath lab. So we're really dealing with 2/3 to 3/4 of the patients will have lesions in at least two of their coronary arteries.
Can you now tell us about the common challenges and decisions you must make when managing patients presenting with multivessel coronary disease?
The challenges that have really arisen over the last few years have partly been related to our success with non-surgical revascularization, the new techniques we have, the ability to deliver stents of all different sizes, different places, has, you know, made us think more and more about revascularization. And in the setting of the population getting older, you know, we're now dealing with more complex anatomy with more complicated patients. So the days of doing an angiogram and seeing three focal lesions in a patient who's in their 50s with normal LV function, which for a surgeon would be a delightful case nowadays, you know, we're dealing with patients in their late 70s or 80s with impaired LV function, and with sometimes anatomy where one or two of the vessels is frankly not a great surgical target. The complexity of the decision-making based on the angiogram, honestly, we're sometimes left with making our best clinical decision. And that's where really where I found this technology is helpful, because interrogating each of the vessels, I can now give the surgeon an idea and also give myself an idea of what it would take to truly revascularize the areas that are needed.
Now, you, as an early adopter of physiology, quickly recognized complete or multivessel physiologic assessment was a solution in your patients with multivessel coronary disease. Tell us about your evolution from FFR to IFR to IFR co-registration and why it's so important to you.
I think when the initial data for FFR came out, it was really eye-opening. The data from the FAME trial and the DEFER trial really challenged our use of the angiogram as a diagnostic tool. And it really hit me when I had a couple of patients that since finishing fellowship, I wouldn't have hesitated to recommend for bypass surgery. When we started doing FFR, in order to get good with the technique, I decided to do multivessel FFR to really not only test the technology, but to help make the clinical decisions. And it really struck me that on one of the patients, I was literally making the decision between putting a single stent in because the patient had two vessels that were FFR negative, one that was positive. And the difference for the patient was going home the next day versus a 5 to 7 day hospitalization with a sternotomy. And so it really struck me that this technology had a huge impact from the patient perspective and on my clinical decision making. After using FFR and becoming familiar with it and realizing the time that it took to do multivessel interrogation and the use of adenosine, when IFR first came out, I was very intrigued by the ability to use IFR more efficiently and also the idea by being able to do a pullback and be able to interrogate the entire vessel. Interestingly, before IFR was really released and we had it available, I started doing pullbacks with FFR just to get a feel for what the profile looked like. And so when IFR was introduced and became available in our lab, and like you alluded to, we were one of the first few labs in the United States to have IFR available, I realized that it made interrogation of multivessels much more simple. The procedure was much quicker. It was also a huge savings for our hospital, not having to use the amount of adenosine for each procedure. And so really, we became early adopters of IFR. And prior to the availability of head-to-head data with FFR to IFR, we would use both and use the hybrid algorithm. But really, once there was head-to-head data showing equivalence between FFR and IFR, we pretty much evolved to using IFR. So the evolution really began with a recognition of the impact on the patient, and now it's become really a part of our everyday working strategy.
Can you now talk to us a little bit about your thought process when you suspect multivessel coronary disease on the angiogram?
Yeah, I think the technology has had the biggest impact in really changing my thought process on the patient level. The ability to interrogate each vessel and not only tell which vessel is ischemic and which vessel should be revascularized, but to be able to do co-registration or a pullback to look at tandem lesions and really make a decision based on what would be required to revascularize, meaning how many stents would it take to completely normalize IFR in each of the vessels. And then putting that together with the patient age and comorbidities and LV function now gives me a whole broader wealth of data to put together to make the clinical decision. So for instance, if I have a patient who's more elderly with LV dysfunction and I interrogate their LAD and there's only a focal area that can be easily stented and the two other intermediate lesions are IFR negative, that clinical decision is very easy. If I have that same elderly patient with LV dysfunction and the LAD is going to require 50 millimeters of stent plus additional stents in the right coronary and the circumflex, then that becomes a much more meaningful decision with the surgeon and with the patient to decide what's the best strategy.
How then do you use this physiologic assessment to guide conversations and decision-making?
I think having the information, the physiology data, and the angiogram together when I'm having the conversation with the surgeon is extremely helpful, not only in multivessel coronary disease, which is really our focus, but also in valvular disease, it's become really essential. But the conversation with the surgeons now more go like, I have this patient who's this risk for surgery. I think he's a reasonable candidate for surgery. And his LAD is significant at this level. The bypass would need to be put at this level in order to normalize the IFR. And you can do that with each of the other vessels. So the conversation with the surgeon is not just plug a graft in, but you can give them data that says, okay, I need the graft after the second diagonal, after the first marginal branch, or the PDA and PL branch both need to be grafted. So it's a much more fruitful conversation. And honestly, surgeons will often tell me, look, I can't get a graft that far down. The lima will never stretch there. And so we sometimes have a conversation that says, although from a clinical data, surgery might be the best thing for the patient, the surgeon knows he's not going to be able to get complete revascularization. And then we'll have a conversation of whether stenting is really the best for the patient. So it's a much deeper conversation with the surgeons. And our surgeons have honestly will ask us when they have an intermediate lesion, they'll ask us whether we've interrogated to make a decision on whether they should graft it or not.
So it really sounds like this tool has helped you to build a strong partnership with the surgeons. And from what I've heard, they're quite appreciative of the information you're giving them.
Yeah, it really has. And you know, part of the evolution has just come along with the whole heart team approach we have in treating other cardiac diseases. So we certainly have way more conversations with and regular conversations with the surgeons. But honestly, I think it allows for better surgical planning for the patients. And the surgeons have really come to embrace that, you know, they don't want to put a graft on a vessel that is not ischemic because their surgical data shows that their grafts don't stay open. 30% of them close within the first year. And so they really appreciate us, you know, letting them know that, yeah, this is truly ischemic if it's an intermediate lesion.
So when you think about some of the studies like Syntax 2, did those create any barriers there? I mean, it certainly sounds like they didn't create problems and you guys have worked through this quite well.
I think Syntax 2 was really helpful on a couple of levels. I think from an interventional standpoint, it made us actually have to stand back and say, we really should be shooting for as complete revascularization as surgery. I don't think that's possible based on the angiogram. I think it's very possible based upon the other technologies we have to do a job from an interventional standpoint as good as a surgeon. And so that data is very helpful. But I think it also gives the surgeons some hard data to say, look, what they're doing is still benefiting patients. You know, we still can work together to figure out the best strategy. And honestly, we've had some really great conversations with the surgeons on patients who would have never fit in any of the trials based on their comorbidities, their age. And we've been able to figure out ways to get patients through surgery, which we thought was the best thing for them. And then treat a lesion that wasn't a good surgical target. The technology opens up many more options than the dichotomous surgery or intervention.
Physiologic assessment of multiple vessels must be challenging at times. How have technological advances made it easier for you to accomplish?
The evolution from FFR to IFR was a huge step. When we first started doing IFR, you know, I had to endure the eye roll from all the staff in the cath lab, you know, when they had to mix adenosine. And when I would tell them I'm going to do all three vessels, they were like, look, we can get another case done in this time. And they quickly came to embrace it because they realized the difference it made from patients. But the evolution to IFR and then now to IFR co-registration, literally having a physiology roadmap on top of the angiogram, not only helping me to make the decisions on surgery and what to intervene on, but now being able to actually tell stent length, where I should be stenting, getting an assessment of how the IFR is going to change after stenting. As simplistic as it may sound, it's back to the old rule of thumb, measure twice, cut once. I rarely have a case that doesn't go as planned because the planning is done in a very structured manner with the technology so that with the plan in place, 95%+ of the cases go exactly as they were drawn up before I even pull the stent out of the box.
You know, we touched a little bit on stakeholders. I think we've talked a bit about the cardiothoracic surgeon as a stakeholder. There are others here that may be worthy of conversation. How do the patients feel about this approach?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the patient is really the most important stakeholder. And it's been interesting because I think the patients truly understand when you tell them you have this blockage, and I've actually looked at what the pressure and or flow is across that blockage to be sure that it should be treated. And at the same time, being able to tell them that we improved the flow as good as we could. The patients really understand that. And so I think they get the technology. You know, the other stakeholders, really the hospital and the payers, you know, the payers want us to do what the patients need, but nothing more. And so the planning part really, in my mind, does that. It says, look, and now I have some hard data. I'm not just squinting at an angiogram and coming up with a percentage that I can document. I'm coming up with a hard number that says this IFR measurement through this section of the vessel is this, and that's what I'm going to treat. And so I think, and from the hospital standpoint, from a revenue standpoint, I can choose my stent lengths, and rarely do I have to add an additional stent, which for the hospitals, that's a win. But also for the rest of the staff in the hospital, almost all the cases are so smooth and well planned that, you know, after eight or nine cases in a day, they don't feel exhausted because they've done cases that have gone really smoothly.
Very good. Thank you. Let's close here by discussing what our sales team can do to get started with this discussion.
I think I could share with them some of the discussions I've had with my partners that were later adopters of the technology. The biggest thing for me was that it is a solution to a problem. It's a solution for complicated patients. It gave me the ability to think through other solutions other than surgery versus stenting. And it also allowed me to plan very complex cases. For instance, my younger partners will come to me and will say, I have this calcified LAD lesion. It's really long. I'm not sure whether the patient should go to surgery. And they have these other two lesions. In my mind, put the physiology together. If the two other lesions are not significant, you're dealing with single vessel disease. Then you really have to decide, is a lima to the LAD better than a rotablator and 30 millimeters of stent? If the patient's not a good surgical candidate, it's a very easy decision to say, I know this is going to be a complex intervention, but it's the best thing for the patient. The number of scenarios are multiple, but the key is you have a tool in your hands that you can use intelligently to answer the question you have. And just about every clinical scenario has that one crux, that one decision that's going to push you one way or the other. And no cardiologist wants to have to make that decision based on a guess on an angiogram. So from a Salesforce standpoint, it's a solution to a problem. And as their doctors start to use it more and more and become more comfortable with the logistics of getting the measurement and making sure it's accurate, they're going to find lots of other ways to use it. That's the beauty of the technology.
It's really about making people think a little bit more, right? And how they can bring this all together to really drive a very well-informed decision.
Yeah, I think our cath lab staff, I think, has said it the best when, you know, they have the newer doctors. When we first started, especially when we got IFR and it became an easier procedure to do, whenever they would see a doctor hesitate on whether they should intervene or not, the staff would chime in and say, well, look, we can always IFR it and find out. And that kind of became their banner for a while. Let's make sure we need to do something with this. And then when it came to multivessel disease, and again, my own experience was get two out of the three vessels were IFR negative, it became a single vessel case that relieves all the consternation about what's the best thing for the patient.
Thank you. Hey, sales, be on the lookout for an invite to attend a case-based webinar in which Dr. Ambrosia will be sharing more information on how he uses IFR in multivessel CAD. Dr. Ambrosia, thanks for joining me today and educating us on the application of IFR in multivessel coronary disease.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Revascularization Nation. I'm Mike Kramer. See you next time.